From Georgia Public Broadcasting, I'm Virginia Prescott, and we do love to hear your responses to On Second Thought. Here's one that came from a colleague. Earlier this month, we spoke to a leading opponent of the death penalty, that's Sister Helen Prejean. She was in Georgia to talk about the opera adaptation of her book, Dead Man Walking. Well, GPB's Grant Blankenship, based in Macon, suggested that we run an opposing point of view from Fred Bright. Bright prosecuted death penalty cases when he was district attorney of Okmulgee Judicial District. Here he is speaking with reporter Sam Whitehead.
During my 21-year tenure as the elected DA, we had 13 full-blown, knockdown, drag-out, about 2 weeks each, death penalty jury trials. So it was 13. Eight of the 13 got the death penalty, and four of the eight have actually been executed. I want to emphasize this. It's not a notch under a belt. This is human life we're talking about. We're guided by the law. All right. First of all, it's only for murder cases. You've got to have a murder case, which is the, with malice aforethought, the death of another human being. In other words, it's a deliberate, intentional killing, not self-defense, not accident. It's got to be murder. I'll give you examples. In the Moss family case, that was Daniel Anthony Lucas and Brandon Rode. And both of them got the death penalty. They committed two burglaries of the Moss family, went in there, burglarized the home, left, came back looking for more stuff, guns, whatever, to steal. And as all members of the Moss family, three of them, 11-year-old Brian, his 14-year-old sister Kristen, and the father, 37-year-old Stephen, came home, they were each executed, slaughtered one at a time in the sanctity of their own home. 13 shots were fired, all 13 hit flesh, none missed. I mean, that one was, I don't want to say a no-brainer, but that one, I knew right away that was a death penalty. Believe it or not, my heart goes out to the defendant's family. Most of the time, they're decent folk. I mean, they're hurting. They're going to suffer. I always argued one word, and that was justice, that for this horrific murder, the only justice is the death penalty.
Fred Bright, who died of cancer in 2018, he was in his early 60s. He was DA of Okmulgee Judicial District, and our thanks to Grant Blankenship, who alerted us to this conversation. That was after hearing our interview with Sister Helen Prejean earlier this month. And you can listen to that conversation at gppnews.org. We do welcome your thoughts on what you hear during On Second Thought. You can chime in. We've got conversations going on now on our Facebook group, GPB Radio's On Second Thought, about blackface, safety for homeschool kids, or anything that you want to talk about. You can also find us on Twitter at OSD Talk, email us at onsecondthought@gpb.org, or leave us a message, 404-500-9457. Now, tomorrow on the show, we're going to talk with two hip-hop historians about a new Georgia State study exploring how political hip-hop influences thinking about women. And the results may well surprise you. So hope you'll join us for that. As The Onion so succinctly put it, the death rate is holding steady at 100%. Nobody knows their expiration date, but most of us banish the thought of the inevitable from our minds. Not Tim McDonough, the veteran actor and now retired artistic director from Emory University Theater, has written a series of monologues about mortality that are really anything but morbid. His one-man show, A Bunch of Different Ways I'd Like to Die, is running this weekend, February 28th through March the 3rd, at Atlanta's Synchronicity Theater. And he's here to join me in the studio to talk about what he's calling a dead serious comedy. Hello, Tim.
Hello, Virginia.
You've been an actor for decades. I'm wondering how many times you've died on stage.
Well, that's a really good question, because I'm sure that dying on stage with some presence of mind and intense energy is one of the factors that's heightened my awareness of death. I really don't know how many times. It's at least a dozen or 15 or more times, and that's not even counting the plays in which I've left the stage to be reported dead a few minutes later. But a lot of deaths. And what's remarkable is that I started in college. Right at the beginning of my career, I fell into theater accidentally in college, and my first two roles, I died on stage. So there's something going on there besides the fact that I'm obviously a character actor and I was tall enough to play parents and older people early in my career.
Well, you've also won great acclaim for playing King Lear. You were in 1998, you were Creative Loafing Actor of the Year, Susie Bass Award, loads of awards for the work that you've done. But I'm wondering about this. You know, are you one of those people who have always thought a lot about death?
It may be that I was more aware of it earlier in life than some people.
Well, you did study philosophy in college. That's usually a sign.
That's usually a sign that you're thinking about certain inevitabilities. And certainly when the alarm bell went off on my biological clock at age 40 and I started tearing up about any mention of mortality for about a year, I was aware. But about 10 years ago, when I came to what my parents would have thought of as a retirement age, I began writing about mortality and trying to reassess who I am at this stage of my life, particularly with respect to the fact that I will one day die. Who will I be as I die? In what spirit will I die? What will be my understanding of what is happening to me? And I thought those questions were important for me to address and that perhaps they might be of interest to other people, since my own perspectives are meant to encourage audiences to develop their perspectives on the end of life.
And as a creative person, you put this to work. You started writing these monologues.
I started writing these monologues.
How do you start preparing for something like that?
Well, I actually had the idea to think about a variety of ways in which I might die. And so that's one frame for a bunch of different ways I'd like to die, thinking about various scenarios and thinking about eventually what would be a good death for me. I read years ago that Civil War soldiers who were dying in those god-awful field hospitals and were not able to be surrounded by their family as they died would take some photographs of family members and place them around their bed so that they could feel they were dying a good death. And I realized in writing this piece that over the decades of my acting career, the audience has become part of my extended family. And this is, in a way, this performance is, in a way, my enactment of a series of good deaths for myself, surrounded by family, who I refer to at one point as those familiar strangers with whom I'm intimate. And I'm glad for their company as I die over and over in this piece.
What is it? I don't know, a kind of like inoculation, you know, a talismanic thing that if you rehearse your death enough times in front of all these people and talk through it, that is no longer as frightening as it would be otherwise?
That's, I think, true. And in fact, I am so concentrated in the performance on presenting these scenarios to an audience that I hardly am aware of the energies that I had when I first wrote the piece. And of course, I'm an actor, so I need a script and I need to rehearse and I need lines. So the prospect of coming to the moment where I'm supposed to speak my last words and I'm going to improvise? No, I need some script. So that's comforting to me, because actors' nightmares about performance when you're in rehearsal for a show, for example, are that you haven't rehearsed, you haven't bothered to learn your lines, you don't even know what the play is that you're about to go on. And it's very comforting to me to know what's going to happen next and how I'm going to get myself there. So in a way, this is a comforting act for me.
An actor rehearsing. But it's also, you know, this is not a morbid thing. This is a very life-affirming, comic in places. Here's a little bit from your monologue. This is Death is My Garden is the piece.
I imagine death knocking on my door. The days of door-to-door salesmen are long gone, and of course death is not an easy sell. So this knock is perhaps more like UPS or FedEx come to deliver death, which has been back-ordered since birth, and insult to injury, death wants me to sign for it.
That's actor Tim McDonough. His one-man show, A Bunch of Ways I'd Like to Die, is starting this weekend in Atlanta. But Tim, so what is this? Laughing it off for you? Being aware of your own mortality, is it good for you to kind of make a joke out of it?
It is. I mean, laughter, after all, enables us to confront things that we might otherwise avoid. And, well, you know, Virginia, when things get so awful that you start laughing, things are just so terrible that you and people around you start laughing. And what could be more terrible than death? So the comedy of it is instructive. And in fact, you're right that I have found the piece to be, for myself, inspiriting. It's something I can do about my mortality. Mm. And one of the things I've learned is that death is not one of those inevitabilities about which we are helpless and can do nothing. There's a lot that we can do about death in terms of thinking about the desiderata that we have for our own demise. So I've found that thinking about death, I read obituaries every day, is not antithetical to having a great time living. In fact, the two go hand in hand. We need to live an animated, active, present, mindful life precisely because we are aware of death. The great Renaissance essayist Michel de Montaigne says that we should have nothing so frequent in our thoughts as death, because it will empower us and enable us to not be afraid of death, its novelty and strangeness, as he says. So I found that this piece is as much about living as it is about dying. Mm.
I love the idea of the cloaked figure of death from a Bergman film instead coming to your door as a FedEx delivery person. Yeah. Well, you know, this has also made me think a lot when I was looking into this, the order of the good death or the death positive movement. These are, you know, relatively recent movements that new thinking about end of life care, you know, alternative funeral rights and laws changing in many states that allow a person to sit with a body. So there are ways of being present with death that have been distanced in the past, not I guess, 100 years from being medicalized or industrialized. Is this in some ways a way to get back to that? Like, you know, death is always with us.
It is always with us. And in the course of the piece, whether in a comic or a serious mode, I express various protests about the dismal possibilities for death in our society, dying in some commonplace room somewhere, dying in an ambulance, dying dancing on the living room floor to the bouncy beat of a defibrillator, as I say in the piece. These are all dismal possibilities, and dying away from people. The fantasy of dying in my garden, for example, and becoming a mindless mound of nutrients is not unconnected to the movement toward composting our bodies and returning to the earth, which is one way to make sense of death. And my piece is an attempt to explore ways of understanding death so that if I can't quite reconcile myself, at least I come to terms with its senselessness.
Mm. Well, there are a number of different people who have, this has actually become sort of a thing lately, that they write their own obituary.
You're right.
Have you written yours by any chance?
I have not written my obituary, although I think these monologues about mortality are a kind of a long-winded obituary, which audiences can sit there and listen to and watch. because I am talking about my life's journey toward death.
Well, this is not your first time performing this. You've been doing it around the country. I'm wondering how people are responding.
The comforting fact, Virginia, when you say something that's, you think, secret and nobody else has thought this way, and you say it often to a stranger because you wouldn't risk saying it to somebody you know, and they say, oh my gosh, I think that way too. So one of the comforting things has been to hear from audiences that they have, in fact, been thinking and wondering and imagining the end of life in similar terms, and that they have found that the piece is about living as much as about dying. Those are comforting things to me, and I grew up an only child, so it's nice to think that I'm connected to audiences that way, in a way that I wasn't feeling growing up.
Well, Tim McDonough, thank you so much for being with us, full, present, and alive.
Thank you very much for inviting me to be here.
Tim McDonough is going to be performing a bunch of different ways I'd like to die this weekend. That's February 28th through March 3rd at Atlanta's Synchronicity Theater. There are details on our website. That's at gpbnews.org. And before we go, I want to just share another response is that we got to Laura Relier's conversation about losing her accent. One person posted, let's see, it's Hansta, says, in the past several years, I've been working on bolstering my Southern accent. There's nothing second rate or ignorant about it. We must claim it and maintain it. I do code switch. We all do. And we also play it sometimes. Code switching, again, the idea of you adapt for different like outside veneers for different kind of circumstances. And awesome piece. Thanks, Virginia. Well, happy to do it. Happy to have this kind of conversation and all the conversations that we have, and would love to keep an ongoing conversation with you. So please join the conversation. We're on Facebook at GPB Radio's On Second Thought. That's a Facebook group. We're also on Twitter at OST Talk. Let us know how you're feeling about the approaching end, whether it comes ringing at the doorbell in the form of a FedEx or a UPS delivery person or not. Alex Word is our engineer, LaRaven Taylor and Leighton Rowell and Elena Rivera and Amelia Brock produced the show. Our senior producer is Amy Kiley. Back tomorrow with more of On Second Thought from Georgia Public Broadcasting.